It's Sunday morning. Time for the Great Outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. And happy Sunday before Thanksgiving. We didn't need a calendar to tell us that it's deer season because the weather has turned just absolutely wicked if you're a deer hunter. Yesterday's winds that came ripping out of the northwest are the kind that I guess the deer must be controlling the weather, because that's the kind of conditions with those high winds and falling temperatures and spitting snow, that in some cases more than spitting snow, that make it deer bed down and they don't move. So we're going to have, likely for the third year running in a row, a low opening weekend deer harvest in Illinois. We knew the deer numbers were down in several parts of the state. There's been a long-running discussion as to what to do about that. So in a way, we don't have a good indication of how far down they are because of the conditions yesterday, the opening day. Today is certainly much better. The cold makes deer move. We need the wind to stop. But overall, 3 years in a row of just really rotten conditions on the opening of deer season. And as many of you know, the reason we have a deer season, aside from offering sport hunting opportunity, lots of food for people, is that it's the way to manage the deer population. There is no more effective way to control a deer herd and to keep it in proportion to the desired numbers for the habitat than through hunting. So anyway, to all of you going deer hunting this morning, bundle up, be safe, make sure you strap yourself into your stands. I'm going to move from deer hunting to the discussion we've now been having for about 9 months. I'll be quick on it today, the Land and Water Conservation Fund. We are getting closer to a deal, the biggest deal in conservation, $900 million a year is at stake, hugely important to the future of conservation. It looks like that there is going to be some movement to bring about the badly needed economic reforms, which we've all been striving for, those of us in the conservation community, while also providing more targeted funding and the ability for states to have a greater input, and also for the not-for-profit private sector organizations in the conservation world to have an input. There's no question that there is a huge amount of waste in the Land and Water Conservation Fund. Former Speaker of the House John Boehner considered it to be one of the most wasteful programs in Congress. I think that says an awful lot, and I think it's unfair. But when you have $900 million slushing around, as has been the case in the Land and Water Conservation Fund, a lot of special interests get served. So the whole movement now here, as we move into the last few days before the legislative session breaks for the year in Washington, the whole movement on the Senate and the House is, can we bring about the very badly needed economic reforms so that the Land and Water Conservation Fund is well managed, that it does have the proper oversight, and that the money goes to the entities and to the programs for which it was designed. Congress, as you may remember, has been stealing, there's no other word for it, roughly $600 million a year for many years, using it for other purposes and writing an IOU. So land funds that were supposed to go towards boat ramps and access and habitat management and acquisitions and easements has been stolen to go for diapers and other programs with an IOU written against it, of which there's now about $20 billion written against it. Congress, if they get this right, will fully fund the $900 million, which comes from the offshore oil and gas tax royalties on drilling, and that they will mandate that $900 million be spent on conservation, and they will set up a commission to oversee it with accountability so we won't have the wasteful spending and special interests that are taking place. And to use a word that is vastly overused, it will be transparent. You'll be able to go online and see how every penny was spent. And if we're buying $6,000 outhouses, we'll know about it. And if a congressman or congresswoman is putting a special little something in for their district for the Land and Water Conservation Fund that has not been vetted and not been approved by the commission, we'll know about it, which is one of the reasons why it's having such a difficult time getting through Congress, is because many individuals don't want to see it change. They kind of like it the way it is. $600 million gets stolen from the top and used for non-purpose causes of Land and Water Conservation Fund. Then the remaining money gets passed around like Christmas candy to legislators who do favors for people that they want to do favors for. not necessarily things that are great for the environment. Certainly in that $300 million that's been spent every year, which is a ton of money, there is certainly funds that have been really well spent, right on target, and are exactly what the Land and Water Conservation Act was supposed to do in providing access and providing habitat improvement and providing acquisitions. But unfortunately, of that $300 million, not enough of that $300 million is being spent in that way, and a lot of it's being spent on pet projects with very little oversight, lots of overhead, and we're going to find that we buy $5,000 and $6,000 outhouses when we don't need to. That's what's going on in Congress right now. The reformers in Congress want to set up a new program, which, as a taxpayer, all of us should think is a great idea. Let's get oversight of it. Those in Congress, we just kind of like the way the deal is. They want to keep it going, and they'll take $300 million because they can spend it as they want, as opposed to $900 million without being able to spend it for little curry favors to people. It actually reminds me a lot, and maybe reminds you a lot listening this morning, of what's going on in Illinois and why we don't have a budget in Illinois. We have a governor who says we're not doing what we've been doing before. We're not just parceling this out in patronage and in wasteful spending. We're going to run the state more efficiently. And we have a lot of legislators who kind of like it the way it was. The Land and Water Conservation Fund is no different. There are a lot of legislators who like it the way it is, who don't want to see the reforms brought about. And yet us as constituents who are demanding that we have more efficient use of our conservation resources, we deserve better, and I think we're going to get better. I think we are going to receive an early Christmas present from Congress, which is a reauthorization of the Land and Water Conservation Fund at all $900 million, and with a new oversight board. And all of you listening on WGN, for these many months we've talked about it, and many of you have contacted me and contacted your legislators, you can take a bow if that happens, because we've made a difference. We have hammered this issue, and we'll see what happens. We're in the final weeks. Of course, it might not get done either. It might get kicked into the next year. But this is, it looks to me, with everything I hear from my friends in the industry, that this is going to be done. And when it happens, in no small part to you listening to WGN Radio and WGN Radio itself, for having broadcast the importance of reforming the biggest conservation funding program in the history of North America. So a couple minutes before the break, I want to switch from that discussion about hopefully fixing a lot of federal waste to a discussion which I'll continue after the break, and that is what's going on with our national wildlife refuges and federal lands. And there does appear to be a concerted effort within the Congress of the United States to, in fact, bleed the Fish and Wildlife Service and federal lands management dry, with the objective being to then enable the states to get greater control over those lands that are currently federal lands, particularly in western states. The Sagebrush Rebellion, which was one of the great awakenings, if you will, and if you remember back when Ronald Reagan was elected president in 1982, he was in part elected president because of the quote-unquote Sagebrush Rebellion, when all of the western states, 100%, voted for a new president, President Reagan, on the mandate that the federal government get out of the way of the states, and that the states be able to manage their lands more efficiently and manage their resources more efficiently. Well, it's been gone dormant, but it hasn't gone away, and we are looking at Sagebrush Rebellion number two in many elements. It's not as powerful. David Stockton is the head of the Budget Committee, who made it famous about government waste and government overreach in the West. But that sentiment is definitely gaining traction. And what's occurring is that Congress is continuing to underfund the management of federal lands. 2.2% of the federal budget went to managing federal lands 25 years ago. Today, 1.1% of the federal budget goes to managing federal lands. 50% reduction at a time when the federal budget, of course, it's grown greatly, but there are fewer employees working for the National Forest Service today than there were 20 years ago. The money that used to be used for wildlife management and habitat management in our national forests is increasingly being taken to fight wildfires, which are an ever-growing problem in the West due to the mismanagement of our forests and BLM lands. So We have a vicious circle. We've had poor management of our lands, which is leading to more and more fires. The fires cost a great deal of money. Congress is taking that money from the budgets of the U.S. Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management and using it to fight fires, which in turn means we don't have the funding available to improve the habitat to reduce the fires. It sounds like government at work. And it is government at work. Only government's not working very well. And as a result, we are seeing a huge erosion of the habitat base and the management practices that are supposed to be taking place on our federal lands, which enables the Sagebrush Rebellion Act 2 to say, see, the federal government can't manage these lands. They're not interested in managing these lands. They don't spend any money on these lands. These lands ought to be turned over to the states to manage them, who will spend them much better, who will hit much closer to home. And all that philosophically, you know, you might agree with, well, if we manage things closer to home, they're better taken care of. I personally believe that. On the other hand, the states don't have money to manage this, so the federal government wants to turn it over to the states, which is maybe a good idea, but without any money coming, which is a really bad idea. So that's what's going on with the whole discussion on federal lands management. I'll be back in just a moment with a footnote on the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and then I want to talk about a new segment, I guess we're only going to do it once, called Mike and the Mouse. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN, and first a message from your Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
It's a winter wonderland, and it's your playground if you have the right equipment. Well, the 2015 Chevy Silverado is the key to a winter full of activity. With 12,000 pounds of towing capacity, Silverado can tow your snowmobiles anywhere you want to go. Hunting, ice fishing, Silverado gets 24 miles per gallon on the highway. And if you're hunting for a new truck, there's never been a better time to see your local Chevy dealer. They have leasing experts who can get you more Chevy for less money with a big fix lease. Chevy Silverado is the first and only pickup to offer 4G LTE Wi-Fi that keeps you connected on the go. It's the longest lasting, most dependable pickup on the road, and that makes it the best choice you can make for off the road. Throw in a 2-year, 24,000-mile free schedule maintenance, and you've got yourself an all-American camping partnership made in heaven. Ask about the Big Fix lease at your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for all the details. Track it down. And oh, by the way, there's no limit.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio, and hope you're enjoying the show on the Sunday before Thanksgiving. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, if you are headed to a deer stand, which you're probably about to be climbing into, please be careful. Strap yourself in. Far too many deer hunters inadvertently are injured and sometimes even killed falling out of deer stands. And I know it's I for one do this. I climb up in the stand and I don't strap myself in because I'm lazy. But fortunately, I'm increasingly less likely to not strap myself in. Please do it. It's a good way to stay in your stand. You never know when you might fall asleep. You never know when you might move wrong. It's the number one cause of injury, and actually the number one cause of serious injury in deer hunting is people falling out of their deer stands, their tree stands. I want to return to a subject. Before the break, I was talking about the federal lands issues and how the Sagebrush Rebellion Part 2 is at place in play. And before I go to my segment, Mike and the Mouse, I want to talk about how that translates over to federal refuges and the National Wildlife Refuge System, which we touched on a couple weeks ago. All this is tied in together. The new buzzwords of the quote-unquote environmental community are no GMOs, genetically modified organisms, will be used on national wildlife refuges. In fact, we should not plant any crops on national wildlife refuges because that's not natural. What the environmentalists, and there's no other way to describe it other than people who are completely ignorant of how the National Wildlife Refuge System came into being and why it needs to be managed, is that the national wildlife refuges were created for migratory waterfowl. Almost all of them, the exception of Din Darling, which was the first one down in Florida, almost all the national wildlife refuges in the Midwest, across the prairies, and in the South were created to harbor migratory waterfowl because waterfowl didn't have a place to go and their habitat was shrinking. Sure, there are lots of other benefits. There are lots of eagles, there are lots of deer, there are lots of owls, there are lots of endangered species on national wildlife refuges. But that's not why those national wildlife refuges exist. And if we do not plant, if we fail to plant crops on the national wildlife refuges for waterfowl, they will not have enough food upon which to survive the winter, because the agricultural landscape today doesn't provide that amount of food. So it's a really important issue as part of the whole discussion on federal lands. But the National Wildlife Refuge system is under siege in a lot of ways, and now it's under siege from a group of environmentalists who think we ought to just let the grass grow. Well, guess what? There isn't sufficient food in the grass to feed the tens of millions of waterfowl that are dependent on National Wildlife Refuges. I got about 2 minutes left. I think you'll enjoy this segment. I think I can only do it once because I doubt it happens again. We're going to call it Mike and the Mouse. A couple weeks ago, I was duck hunting with an individual, and let's just call him Mike. And we were riding in a four-wheeler with a boat towed behind. We got to the area in which we were going to hunt, and while the four-wheeler was moving along, we went through some buck brush, and we rubbed against the trees, and no big deal, and this individual got out, and we were putting out the decoys, and he felt this thing itching in his upper part of his waders and thought maybe it was a twig or something, and asked the individual with him, can you pull this twig out? And they couldn't find a twig. Of course, it's dark. And he's sitting there in the blind, and he keeps itching, and he doesn't really know what it is. And he asks the individual again, can you please pull this out? There's got to be a twig in my back, in my waders. Nope, couldn't find it. And then while they are sitting there having this wonderful discussion about nature, the individual with the itching in his back describes how he just hates mice. He cannot stand mice. Another individual says his fear is snakes. He can't stand snakes. And so they go back and forth, and we get in the four-wheeler, and they come back at the end of hunting, and the individual is standing in the driveway of the lodge getting ready to take off his waders, and he's not moving, and he feels this itching again, and the itching doesn't go away. And he realizes it can't be a twig in his waders. He thought in the blind, you know, he was moving around. Well, now he's standing dead still, and it's itching. So he takes off his coat, and he pulls down his waders, and out falls a mouse. The same individual who announced that he just can't stand mice has had a mouse in the back of his waders scratching his back for about 3 hours, enjoying every moment of the warmth of being inside of neoprene, as opposed to sitting on a limb in the cold, wet marsh. So anyway, that's my segment on Mike and the Mouse. I'm sure you all, at one time or another, have had a humorous experience in the outdoors of some kind. That was mine a couple weeks ago. It goes to show that you just never know what's going to fall off a tree branch and into the back of your waders. Thanks so much for listening this morning. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving. I'll be back next Sunday morning on the Great Outdoor Show. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.